I'm very happy now to welcome Dee Dee Snow. She is an historic sites archaeologist with the Historic Preservation Division of New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So, luxury goods. Now, I have here a quotation from an article from 1935 by France V. Scholes that maybe you could read.
The citation is, New Mexican life was characterized by a roughness, a lack of luxury and refinement, a crudeness, and a striking degree of ignorance. You don't find them in the archaeological record. At the same time, there are some types of goods that we do recover in the archaeological record that we hadn't expected to find in New Mexico.
What are some examples of those?
Well, Chinese porcelains, Mexican and Spanish ceramics. We have pieces of jewelry that have been uncovered.
For example, a headdress of pearls.
Well, we've never found a headdress of pearls. I wish we had. However, we have found in the Palace of the Governors in 1974, we found an earring that was made of blown glass. It's in the shape of a pearl, and it's covered with gold leaf. Subsequently, Steve Post, who conducted excavations at the palace around 2003-2004, found a gold earring that is similar to a gold earring found in a Spanish colonial site south of Santa Fe.
So these luxury goods belonged to a pretty small proportion of the population?
Well, yes and no. We don't know who occupied LA 20,000, where one of those gold earrings was found. Of course, the palace was occupied by the governor and the people who worked for the governor. So they're among the elite. Up at San Gabriel, the first Spanish capital of New Mexico, we have Chinese porcelains that were antiques when they were brought to New Mexico by Oñate and his followers. We don't know who owned those.
Another sign of luxury is spices.
Mm-hmm. When Oñate came to New Mexico, he brought with him 4 pounds of saffron. And when Fray Alonso Benavides came to New Mexico in 1626, he brought with him a little more than 5 pounds of saffron. I can't even imagine that much saffron in one place at one time.
I know. I mean, today you get these tiny, tiny expensive packages of it if you can find it at all.
Yes, that's quite correct. The saffron that Benavides brought with him was valued at more than 17 pesos a pound. So it was expensive then as it is now.
How does understanding this help give you a bigger picture of New Mexican life during the colonial period?
New Mexico was remote. There is no question about it. However, there was constant communication between New Mexico and Mexico to the south. However, that communication was consistent with the times. Instead of being able to fly to Mexico City in a couple of hours, transportation took weeks. However, it was constant. People were not living in a vacuum. People brought their culture with them. And this is something that we tend to forget when we are told that New Mexico was remote beyond compare. It's a good description, but we tend to emphasize that remoteness and think, as Franz Scholes did, of people as ignorant. They were backwater. That's not necessarily the case.
Probably in some ways, correct me if I'm wrong, there was more communication with Mexico City or more cultural interaction than now.
That's very true. Absolutely. There was no border. So, yes, as I say, communication was constant, but but consistent with the times.
So besides the trade of goods, what kind of travel back and forth, what was the purpose of the exchange between New Mexico and Point South?
When Oñate settled at San Gabriel in 1598, he had been given a set of orders. He was looking for precious metals, which did not exist, but it would take him several years to find that. Meanwhile, he kept reporting back to the viceroy in Mexico City, and the viceroy and the church in Mexico City kept trying to communicate with him, to find out what was going on. At the same time, there was this constant communication between Mexico City and Spain to keep tabs on Oñate and the settlers up here. That continued throughout the colonial period.
How were young people educated during that period? What kind of schools, what was their schooling like?
There were no schools, per se. There were schools associated with the missions in New Mexico, but those schools were developed to teach catechism and Christianity, responses to the Mass and the like, by the Indians within the various missions. Children would learn at an at-home situation. There was a degree of there were people, both Spaniard and of course Spaniards, but who could not read or write, and there were scribes. There were official scribes in Santa Fe for those who could not read or write, but who wanted to communicate with Mexico.
Now, some of these objects, like the pearl headdress, we don't have, although they exist in the documents. Some of these other luxury items that you will be talking about in your lecture do exist. Has there been an exhibition of them where people can see the real things?
What we've used in the exhibits have been portraits, contemporary portraits, not painted in New Mexico, but portraits of Europeans and individuals from Mexico. Who are wearing or who wore some of these items. But to give you an idea of some of the things that were brought to New Mexico, in 1600, the Antonio Conde de Herrera came up with reinforcements from Mexico City, and he brought with him 7 men's suits of wool, coarse cloth, and silk, 2 pairs of house slippers to wear at San Gabriel, 5 pairs of spurs, handkerchiefs, a woolen field tent, a camp bed, 8 chairs, and a table, along with a tub for washing. His wife, Francisca Galindo, brought with her a necklace of pearls and garnets, a large gold cross, a headdress of pearls with a gold image of Our Lady, a small pot and a salt cellar of silver with 6 small and 1 large spoons, 3 pairs of new clogs. Now those, the clogs that she brought with her, were worn, foot gear worn over her shoes to keep her feet out of the mud. It's a little incongruous to think of those being worn in New Mexico. She also had dresses with ruffs, and she brought with her a bedspread of crimson taffeta trimmed with lace, sheets, pillows, bolsters, and many other things suitable for the adornment of women and the home.
Now, I mean, but just to be clear, this is the upper class. I mean, this
now,
is
now, this was pretty fancy. This was very definitely pretty fancy. We have Cristobal Oñate, Juan de Oñate's son, brought a set of trappings for a horse and everything else with very elegant stirrups, and they were, which was valued at 120 pesos. That's a lot more than the saffron. He brought 6 hats, 3 elegant black for use with feathers, and a fine brown hat with braid of gold and large pearls set with stones of various colors and brilliancy. Well, those obviously don't last. And If they weren't in tatters and you know, completely gone, then they were taken back to Mexico when they left.
So you are giving a lecture on Thursday, the 14th of January, and you will be talking about these items. How do you relate them to the social people history of the time?
Oh, these people, I mean, they brought with them the goods that they were familiar with. This was part of their culture. And New Mexico was a new settlement, but they were bringing their culture with them. They just really hadn't planned on San Gabriel and eventually Santa Fe being quite as remote as they were.
And so here they were in the cold, remote mountains of this place with their baubles.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's Francisca Galindo and her husband, Antonio Conde de Herrera, were among those individuals who deserted the colony in 1601, and you can see why. Others who were more hardy stayed on. But that does not mean that goods didn't continue to come up over the Camino Real. In 1776, Gertrudis Armijo, who lived in Taos, had among her possessions a number of paintings on canvas, along with crucifixes of metal and the like that she lived with in her home. Juana Lujan had a collection of maiolica from Mexico. She also had Chinese porcelain dishes, plates, cups, and silver utensils.
Tell us more about the Camino Real.
The Camino Real was the most direct route between here and Mexico City. It was followed by Oñate as he moved north into New Mexico. It parallels roads that we use today. It's
I-25 going
south? I-25, yes.
Mm-hmm. So I-25 is essentially the Camino Real.
Well, it parallels portions of the... Yes, definitely.
Well, Dee Dee Snow is a historic sites archaeologist with the Historic Preservation Division of New Mexico. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.